everybody.
Hey, what's up?
We're finally back.
After what seems to be a millennia.
It feels very long since we've done this. We only had one show where we were actually together.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And but we're back on track now, and you are listening to Frankenstein's on air.
Frankenstein's on
live
air.
From Ybor City.
Recommended by 5 out of 30
dentists.
Reanimators. Okay, that works.
Live from Ybor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio show station of
HCC.
Hillsborough Community College. Sorry, guys, it's been a while.
It's been so long. I got to warm back up.
Yeah, last time it was just me, and it was a struggle, but now we're back on track, and then the hurricane canceled last week's show, but we're here now. How have you been the past millennium?
I've been really good. I wanted to say something really quick. I had a plan for whenever I came back on. I had a plan.
Yes.
And the plan was, and I feel like it would have been great if I could go through with this, that is playing something. I searched through 3 different DVD video stores in Tampa.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're shocked there's 3 because I thought those things died out. But
I guess they're like record stores now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a niche thing.
It is. But like I found literally a comic book shop, video store, and record shop in the same strip mall. And I was like, oh, okay. So we're doing this.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I was searching and I just want to let you know, out of the bottom of my heart, I was going to gift you a DVD for Hellraiser 8.
Because
I knew you wouldn't want that.
I don't want that.
I know. I was looking
for it. I have limited space on my DVD shelf,
And I was going to tell you that you would never, you can't turn down the gift because it came from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to turn it down, but I wouldn't know because I have everything neat and I only have the ones that I really like on there. And I made the mistake of buying Leatherface 2017.
Oh,
and
that's
bad. It bothers
bad.
Me because it's like, do I put it on the shelf where there's like only crap or do I stick it with the rest of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies? And it just looks awful up there and I hate it.
So I went around looking for Hellraiser 8 on DVD.
At least it's not. If it was Revelations, I would have thrown it in the trash.
I was looking because I wanted one of the most forgettable, one of the most just nothing burger of a movie ever, and I couldn't find it. So you dodged a massive
Thank
bullet.
God, I do not.
You dodged
want
a
that.
massive bullet. I was going to surprise you with it on air and everything, and I couldn't find it. So I ended up buying myself a movie.
That's a much better option.
Yeah. But just so you know, you were this close.
For me, I voted today. I got my mail-in ballot and I voted.
Okay, so let's talk about who you voted for on air.
that's no secret.
It's no
and
secret.
I thought it was interesting that there's an amendment they're proposing to protect hunting, and which basically means they want to make it so you can hunt whatever you want as much as you want in the state of Florida, which means no regulations against endangered animals or fishing nets.
That's not really cool at all.
That's not good at all, guys. So go vote.
Yeah, go vote for Kamala Harris.
But on that note,
We've established ourselves as leftists now.
But on that note, we're going to be talking about recently watched films. We're going to be talking about Freddy versus Jason. We're going to continue the history segment finally we're moving on to the 1950s. And then we have
Quaidon.
Quaidon,
which
a film I've never heard of.
You spelt wrong.
I spelt it how it sounded. And
you spelled it like Quaidon, but.
And then we have kind of a random fifth segment for today. We're not really talking about news. But anyways, our first music
break.
Well,
that's because none of the I looked at the news before I got in, and oh my God. No.
Nothing good.
Nothing good.
That's fair.
Nothing good.
Anyway, so because we're in honor of Freddy versus Jason being coming up next, we'll be having, not up next, but it's coming eventually. We're going to play a song from the soundtrack of Freddy versus Jason. It's called Beginning of the End by Spine Shank. And we'll talk to you guys when we're back.
I would like my spine shanked.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome back.
Do you think Jason gets royalties for that song?
No.
Because, no?
He's not real.
He's not what?
Jason's not real. Sage, Jason isn't real.
Okay.
Oh. So that was what we're gonna have a talk of the end of I Spine Shank on the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack. Really, as I was just telling you, a really heater soundtrack full of tons of, it's the most 2000s, early 2000s soundtrack maybe ever.
From what I heard,
It's all nu metal. It's incredible. It's so dated, but it's all really good music. So definitely check it out. But anyway, Sage, what have you been watching recently?
Okay, so what have I been watching recently? I've been watching a lot. So I watched Qui-Gon. I watched I watched Jason Takes Manhattan.
Okay.
I watched let me move my mic back. I watched The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Again, I assume.
Yes, this is not the first time I've seen
it. Yeah, I would be shocked if it was.
That'd be crazy. And I watched a very different thing from all those, which all those being horror. I watched Gone Girl. Because I bought the collector's edition of it.
I've heard it's good.
It's amazing. And we'll get
in. Actually, Gone Girl came up recently in a vote in a film club, which I'll talk about soon.
See, I'm a little bit salty about film club because...
No, this is a different film club.
Oh, really?
This is a different one. Actually, do you want to just... Let me just get into this right now.
Because
I haven't really recently watched anything, although I might have forgotten. But I have a bit of a recently watched... I watched Pan's Labyrinth for the first time.
Okay, that's amazing.
I liked it. Yeah. I liked the World War II stuff more than I liked everything else. But the Pale Man scene steals the show.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's one of the best...
It's very creepy.
They taught that actor how to speak Spanish just for the scene because they wanted him. Mm-hmm. I forget his name, but he's in
Doug Jones. He's Doug playing Jones. He already played Nosferatu in... it's like a remake, but it came out like 10 years ago. It's only just releasing now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was reading this earlier, actually. But anyways, I watched Pan's Labyrinth for USF Film Club. Not really a long story as to why I'm attending a USF Film Club, even though I'm in HCC.
Okay.
But I don't feel like explaining why.
Well, no, I want you to because I want to join the USF Film Club.
Oh, well, I did take a semester at USF, but I don't anymore, but I made friends. So I don't know if you can join. But I was there. Anyways.
Salty about our film club because it's on Tuesdays and I'm always busy.
We've tried moving the dates. I don't think we can.
Make it Thursday and I'll come every time.
Maybe. I'll bring it up. But anyways, so USF Film Club votes on a film every week. And so... They voted the theme for this week's vote. Everyone submitted a movie based on the theme of editing, movies that have really stylistic editing. And I was like, that's hard to choose because a lot of films, it's like, okay, they have a sequence that's quickly edited and stuff. And that's good. That's good editing. But is it like really a standout? Not really.
Megalopolis.
I think someone did suggest that actually.
It's
but
really
I suggested House of 1,000 Corpses.
That's a good choice.
That's really, very stylistic editing.
Yeah, super
now,
stylistic.
I want you to guess what House of 1,000 Corpses lost to for the theme of editing.
The Lego movie or something. I don't
Freddy
know.
Got Fingered.
Oh!
It lost to Freddy. I don't even know how... I don't even know how Freddy Got Fingered is. I'm not even sure if I can say Freddy Got Fingered on air, but I've already said it like 5 times by now.
Oh, that makes me so mad. that actually hurts to hear. I gotta cool down.
I watched Freddy Got Fingered for the first time this past. I knew about it for years. I watched it the first time this summer, and it's either genius. I think it's somewhere. It's both a little bit of genius and a lot of very, very horrible movie. But it's surreal.
So he won a Razzie. I forget his name. Something Green.
Tom Green, I believe.
Tom Green, yes. Tom Green won a Razzie for that movie. And
yes.
He brought his own red carpet to the Razzies and rolled it out and walked on it. And then sat there and picked it back up. But oh my gosh, that movie is... I hate that movie. Like with I've seen it. Guess how many times I've seen that movie.
How many times?
5 times. It's a movie that when people go... people bring it up and I'm like, yeah, we'll watch it. Whatever. I think I've seen it. Like, I wasn't ever the one to be like, let's watch it.
Yeah.
But I've had people be like, yeah, I want to watch a movie. Have you heard of this? It's like people say it's very funny. And I go, it's not, but yeah, we'll watch it. Whatever. Because I always downplay how bad it is going to be. I'm always like, that's not as bad as I remember. And it's always as bad as I remember.
Yeah. It's really baffling.
House of 1,000 Corpses.
There's one scene where he's like playing a piano with like his arms tied up
Eddie,
or something.
Would you like some sausages?
Yes. That scene was when I showed it to my friends, and that scene literally broke her brain.
Because it's one of the it's
at that point you've seen so much, and there's the baby scene. We should for the audience. Freddy Got Fingered is a really it's like early 2000s shock comedy movie,
yeah.
But it's so obnoxious and it's so unfunny that it's almost funny.
Yeah, no, I would agree with
you
that.
Can't tell if it's ironic or not, if it's a parody or not. It's really hard to unpack.
The thing with House of a Thousand Corpses, though, is unlike Freddy Got Fingered, it has one of my favorite lines, which I will censor myself here, but he goes, F your mother, F your sister.
Yes,
and
yeah.
Then at the end he goes, and F you too.
I met him before he died. I have his autograph on my wall. I met Sid Haig.
Wow.
Rest in peace.
That's amazing. I always wanted to meet him.
House of a Thousand Corpses is a movie about a clown and a bunch of other hillbillies that are killing people.
Yeah.
Just for the audience.
It's also the best of that trilogy.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't even like to remember, think that Three from Hell even came out.
Yeah, I hate
it's a duology.
I hate Three from Hell. And to an
I like
extent,
Devil's Reject.
I think Devil's Reject is a good movie. It's just not like.
I like it a lot.
I don't.
I think it's grown. I know it's a little off putting and there are some things I would change about it, but I do. I think he was cooking with that film.
And the ending
is incredible.
I think the ending with Freebird is one of the...
That is the best use of Freebird in anything ever.
Yeah, better than The Kingsman, I would say.
I didn't even know they used it in Kingsman.
Yeah, in Kingsman, there's a scene where he's in a church, and the churchgoers go all crazy, and they start attacking each other, and it's all one take, and he's, like, shooting.
That's kind of cool, but
they do it to Freebird, but it's, like, I just feel like there's a better song choice for that scene.
It seems kind of, like, I don't know. I haven't watched it.
But I will talk about the movies I've watched.
We should do that quickly.
So I watched... Let's start with Gone Girl. Gone Girl is a movie... have you ever been in a relationship, Tim?
Yes.
Okay. well, on the off chance you hadn't, I needed to ask. Well, the thing is, Gone Girl is the premise of the movie. It ponders on the question, what if you stayed with your insane ex and like you married them? What would happen?
Not good things. I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, well, this movie's for them. And it's crazy. It's insane. The twist is wild. And it also talks about the psychology of relationships very well. I think it's really good.
Okay.
But
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I don't want to like get too much into it. I really want you to watch it and talk about it, cuz like the thing is it messes with your head and it makes you it's like you know people like gaslighters and stuff, people who,
yes.
who are always gaslighting. It makes you like actually feel like you're being gaslit while you're watching the movie.
That's cool.
It's like it's
a lot
so
of misdirection
good.
And stuff.
Tons of misdirection and tons of like nobody in the movie is a good person. They kind of like make that out from the beginning that everybody sucks. Like,
yeah.
Real bad. And you find yourself rooting for people that you would never root for in real life. And then the movie makes you feel the movie like purposefully is like why are you rooting for them?
Yeah.
Like why? It's just really good. I actually might rewatch it tonight.
That good then.
It's really good. And it's like, it's also, oddly enough, has Tyler Perry's best performance in it.
Okay.
Unless you really like Madea, I don't think anybody's... I
haven't even watched those.
I don't think anybody's in the argument that Tyler Perry is, like, world's best actor, but in this movie, he's really good. Like, he really throws it home.
Okay.
Ben Affleck is really good, but he's always good.
He's usually pretty decent.
Yeah, like he's not a bad actor, so I'm not putting that past him. I forget who plays his wife, but she's amazing. I'm gonna look it up real quick. Gone Girl, 2014. His wife is played by Rosamund Pike.
Okay.
And she's amazing. Almost every actress and actor in this. Neil Patrick Harris is in it, and he plays the most psychopathic character I've ever seen. It's just – you would not expect Neil Patrick Harris to be able to pull that off, but he does very well. It's kind of got an Uncut Gems thing going on here. But
okay.
It's good. What did you watch?
Pan's Labyrinth, which we talked about.
Which we talked about.
Yeah. Yes. So, all right. So maybe we should go into our next music song.
I'm gonna save Qui-Don for our Qui-Don segment. Yeah,
we're gonna talk about Qui-Don later.
At the end, I'll Qui-Gon talk about the stuff.
All right, so coming up next, we have The Box by Iceland Kills. We're not talking about Hellraiser, but Hellraiser always lives in my heart. We'll see you guys when we get back.
Yeah. This is hell.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to Frankenstein's On Air and live from Ybor City.
Welcome back, everybody.
Live on Hawk Radio, the official radio show of...
Official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. And I want to throw something out there. We're talking about Freddy versus Jason.
Yes.
So I want to touch just ever so briefly on the other famous horror fight.
MVP.
Alien versus Predator. Now, we are all in agreement.
They canceled Alien 5 just to make that movie because of Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah. We're all in agreement that Alien versus Predator Requiem is
bad. Yes.
Okay. But there's a little bit more nuance when it comes to the first one. The first one is not terrible, but it is not good.
Yeah.
I just want to say, in my humble opinion of opinions, Alien Resurrections is worse than Requiem. Sue me Murder Me with Hammers. I don't.
Alien Resurrection is a movie I can watch because I can see things and I can't see anything in Alien Resurrection.
Okay, so I would agree that Requiem is so dark you can't see anything, but I can't watch Alien Resurrections because every line of dialogue makes me want to kill myself. So
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Alien Resurrection.
I can't with that movie.
But anyways, Freddy versus Jason.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. Now, Freddy versus Jason
is
on
the better movie.
Hand.
It is hands down the best versus movie out there. I don't want to hear anything about it. This
Chucky
film
versus Annabelle will be coming out.
Coming out.
No, I'll make it. I'll make that movie.
But this movie took 10 years to make. It was this movie gets a lot of. Doesn't get a lot of credit for how I think it's a lot better than it could have been. It's Freddy versus Jason. They could have put out any schlocky movie out there, but I feel like they actually tried a lot with this film.
This could have been
garbage.
This could have been blockbuster slop that had no soul.
And I think, the plot, guys, is Freddy fights Jason. Jason goes to Elm Street and they fight because Jason's killing so many people. And I think I feel like they're woven in together well. I think the two script writers, Shannon and Swift, they also wrote the Friday the 13th remake.
I like the Friday the 13th
remake. Me too. And I think they did a really good job intertwining the two stories. And I feel like to give this friend, I really want to talk about not so much the movie itself, but what could have been to give you guys more appreciation for this film. Because I read a book many years ago called Slash of the Titans by Douglas McNeil, I believe. Hold on, it's loading. Yes, Dustin McNeil.
Dustin.
A very good book that goes over every unused script for Freddy vs. Jason. They started working on this film in 1992, and they didn't make it until 2003.
Well, I want to just point out that they teased this movie at the end of the worst Friday the 13th film. Jason Goes to Hell with his glove.
It's an amazing ending.
It's an amazing ending.
It's an incredible
ending.
Horrible
film.
Oh, yeah. It's so hype.
I remember the first time I watched Jason Goes to Hell, I was so mad. I was so mad, and I was like, this movie sucks. And then that scene came on, and I watched Freddy vs. Jason immediately
after.
I wish
I could have been there. I mean, if I could watch any Friday the 13th film in theaters besides Freddy vs. Jason, I think it would have been Jason Goes to Hell. Even though it's horrible, that ending would have rocked my world.
That is the Marvel cameo. Of like,
but that was before
film.
It was overdone, though.
Yeah, that's the thing.
This
yeah.
is 1993. That was like brand new to see something like that.
They never did anything like that.
It was also kind of tacked on. It wasn't planned in the script. Someone was like, hey, New Line, can we do this? Because you guys, Jason Goes to Hell was the first Friday the 13th film made by New Line Cinema, who owns Freddy Krueger. They're like, hey, can we just do this? And they're like, sure. And then it's kind of integral to the plot of Freddy versus Jason because Jason's in hell at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the first script was called Nightmare 13. Freddy versus Jason, and it's about there's a cult of Freddy worshippers called Fredheads, and they're trying to resurrect Freddy into the real world through a virginal bride and making her have a baby.
Oh, that kind of sounds like which Friday the 13th is that? The one where
Jason Goes to Hell. That is the one. That's the only one with a baby.
No, I'm thinking of the backstory of Freddy Krueger. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. But anyway, Jason is resurrected by tying pieces together of like barbed wire. They literally tie him together like Frankenstein and electrocute him to life. He's also like an anti-hero who helps Jason in this movie. And who helps the main characters around and even drives them around in a car. So Jason can drive somehow, just like Michael Myers can drive somehow.
Okay, so I'm liking bits and pieces of
this one isn't that terrible.
It's
very goofy, I think, is the problem. This film didn't have a very satisfying fight. They fought for very little time in this film. And Jason, I think Jason doesn't come up until like the hour mark or something.
Yeah.
Freddy at one point drives a nightmare mobile, which you can find concept art for in the book, Slash of the Titans, which looks very cool. And one thing, this started a trend that a lot of other scripts would use, and that's Freddy kills Jason when he was a kid and does other things that the remake Freddy would have done to Jason as well in this script. I can't say it on air.
Wow.
But I think
they really went there?
A lot of scripts went there, actually. And Jason kills Freddy by stomping his head in. So that's cool. That's the first one.
So I don't like...
I don't like that at all, yeah.
I do not like the backstory of him killing Jason.
No.
I think that's stupid.
No. By the time they got to the Shannon Swift script, they had so many rules from things that didn't work in previous scripts. And one of the rules was, don't intertwine their backstories. Stop doing that. It's not working.
That's
the next one is interesting because it's called Jason versus Freddy, which it's just Josh and Drake. It does not sound right.
Yeah.
This one is horrible because this one is it's like the new nightmare for Friday the 13th. It's the real Jason Voorhees is standing on trial. All the movies are just based on him, but this is the real Jason going to court.
Oh boy, this sounds great.
And but it's not New Nightmare Freddy. This is Freddy Krueger from the Nightmare on Elm Street 1 to 6.
See, it would make more sense if it was New Nightmare.
It wasn't. And this was written after New Nightmare came out.
So it's so
confusing, and it would have confused the hell out of audiences.
It would have been weird to even okay, say in some alternate universe they did the New Nightmare Freddy.
Yeah.
It still would be weird that they're not doing actual Freddy and actual Jason.
But. Yes. And what's even weirder is that for some inexplicable reasons, Jason's body is a portal to resurrect Freddy in this one. There's Freddy comes out of Jason's body, kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street 2 when he comes out of that one Jesse. And then at one point, this is the interesting thing, the whole final act is in a mall. And in the mall, because all the Friday the 13th films are just movies in this universe, there is a cardboard standee of a cyborg Jason advertising Jason 2010 with a steel hockey mask on. This script came out before Jason X.
Really?
It predicted Jason X. In fact, they might have planted the seed in like Sean Cunningham and everyone else's minds for Jason X. This might be the origin of that idea.
Can I tell you that Jason X is my second favorite?
I love Jason X. That's fine.
I love that. So much. So that actually. Anyways, that script's amazing for doing
this. It is amazing for that. Everything else stunk. And then ends with a tie. The two merge and blow up. They're like, because Jason's a portal and Freddy came through Jason, so they merge together and blow up, and that's whatever.
I love a good versus movie where nobody wins.
And then time travel is involved in this one, because to stop Freddy, they travel back in time somehow, and someone forges a signature on the search warrant that got Freddy Krueger released by technicality. So he rewrites history that Freddy Krueger is never released from prison, never burned alive, and never becomes a dream demon.
And they fit this all in a script?
Yes,
They fit all of this into one script? That's like insane.
There's another one that was just called the Freddy vs. Jason. This is probably the worst script because nothing is real in this one. Someone goes to Camp Crystal Lake and they take acid. No, it's a fake drug. I forget what it's called. It's a fake in-universe drug. And they have a bad trip and they're hallucinating Freddy and Jason the whole time and you can't tell what's real or not. I mean, that's just really lame.
That's super lame.
Super lame. And also, I think that one was going to have two endings, one where Freddy wins, one where Jason wins. And you go into the audit theater and you think you don't know.
You don't know which one.
I like that idea. In fact, they were considering that for the one that came out, but they went against it because they thought it would be satisfying. And I get why they went against it, but I think it would have been fun.
Aren't there two versions of? No. I thought there was two versions of.
That's a rumor now, but they were planning on it. The last one I have written down here for Freddy vs. Jason is a teen pop sensation lures thousands of fans into a dream concert so Freddy can kill all of them. Because this teen pop sensation learns that she can bring people into her dream, so she's capitalizing on it. And I think
this just sounds like the plot of a nightmare movie.
It sounds horrible though.
Yeah, it sounds really bad.
And Jason speaks at one point and he says, "Blood knows blood." I think because Freddy also killed Jason in this one, and they were like, "I don't know, man. This one was bad."
Yeah, I think that's the worst one.
No, the worst one is the drip bag drug trip one.
I think. Oh yeah, that's actually the worst one.
So those are my unused Freddy vs. Jason scripts, and just knowing how many god off what could have been, I feel like it puts Freddy vs. Jason itself into a higher pedestal. It is the by hands down. Even though some of them aren't as bad as others, the movie that we got is like very tame. It's very like standard. It delivers what you want. You have a lot of kills. You have some great Freddy scenes, great Jason scenes, and a wonderful final
battle.
And
there's nothing convoluted about it.
No,
not that I think about it.
It's a very
all of these other ones are so convoluted in like Jason or Freddy kills Jason as a kid, or they're on drugs, or Jason's real for some reason.
Yeah,
like
what we got is just Jason goes to Elm Street because Freddy tricked him, and then they fight. That's it. And I know the main characters could be better, but to be honest, the main characters in most Friday the 13th films could be better.
I don't think there's a single Friday movie where the main characters are the star of the show.
No, exactly.
I mean, I like Wookiee, that's his name? Or Chewie. Yeah, Chewie.
Chewie,
in the remake, I like him.
Yeah,
that's like
he's
the,
great.
It's the most I can say.
But yeah, I think that's all we have to say for Freddy vs. Jason. It's wonderful. I will defend it to the day I die.
Yeah, so if we're doing a ranking, at the top of the versus films, it's Freddy vs. Jason. It's the best one.
Yes.
Followed by, it's not a horror movie, but still, Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yes.
Followed by Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
Followed by Sadako versus Kayako.
Which, I have not watched that, but I'll take your word on it.
Terrible.
Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
That's okay.
That one's okay.
That one's fine. I don't know where I'd put it, but I want to say that Sadako versus Kayako, I watched all 14. I watched all 14 Ring films and all 14 Ju-on films. And then once I was done doing that, I watched Sadako versus Kayako, so hyped to see these two monsters, the Grudge and the Ring, fight.
It was good.
They fight for a total of 5 seconds in the movie.
Oh, that happens so many times in Versus films. They almost did that in a few of the Freddy versus Jason scripts where the fight is super brief. Happens in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman where they only fight for like 3 minutes.
Yeah, they fight for 5 seconds, and it's an instant win. And then they, technically speaking, fight later in the movie, but it lasts a couple seconds longer.
That's lame.
Because the premise of Sadako versus Kayako is they're trying to seal both ghosts into the afterlife. So they go, they get the ring tape, and they watch the ring tape in the Grudge house, and that's, they both come out, and then they try to seal them away. And it's like the most of the time, both Sadako and Kayako are fighting the people. They're not even fighting themselves. So it's a whole mess, but that's the worst one. That one was such a letdown. All right.
So, I have a little history lesson for us.
History
now.
Time.
I'll do a little history lesson.
1950s.
Yes. Last time when you weren't here, we did the Universal monster movies, and now we're talking about the 50s.
Oh, I'm sad I missed that. I love this.
And this one. Oops, sorry, guys. I chose two films. One you're gonna really like. And I'm glad you didn't miss this one because originally, if you weren't able to attend, you would have missed it. Because I chose two films of the 50s because I felt like they both encapsulate it really well, and I couldn't just pick one. I feel like the 50s, we see a lot of, it's a very conservative era, so we kind of see a reflection of that, in America at least, and also a reflection of World War II, because at the end of World War II, they were like, Dracula, Frankenstein, guys, scary guys with green bolts in their neck, that's not scary anymore. Yeah. What we're scared of? Big bugs.
Big bugs.
And aliens. That's what scared them. Tons of big bug movies, the deadly mantis, with giant ants, tarantula with giant tarantula.
Crawling eye.
Earth versus the flying saucers.
There's a couple. Oh my gosh, I am getting.
There's a ton, but
There's a lot of very good 50s horror films on the hit show Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes.
If you have not watched Mystery Science Theater 3000, check it out. But they watch a lot of old 50s horror movies that just like are amazing. There's some really good ones.
Anyway, so the films that I chose for this, the 50s, are the original Godzilla and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because those I feel like are the best examples of this. Godzilla is a good example of nuclear fallout fear.
So you know me.
Yeah, you love Godzilla.
And I love Godzilla.
And this is directed by Ishiro Honda, I should say.
And I will say, Ishiro Honda is a visionary mastermind.
Oh, he's incredible.
That movie, on my ranking for Godzilla films, the original, Godzilla 1954,
it's still
ranks,
the best.
It ranks on number 3 for me. Because there's just Shin Godzilla, Godzilla Minus One are
those really, are really good. But really I think the original is, I think, a lot of, I think it can seem a lot of like, I don't know, it's so old, people kind of get it mixed up with all the cheesy ones that came after, which I love as well.
I love Showa era Godzilla films.
It's my favorite era.
I think that's great. My favorite is Heisei, personally.
Yeah.
But the thing with that first 1954 Godzilla film is that it was scary.
It's depressing. I watched it when I was a kid, and it was just like, I loved it, but it's got a different feeling to it. The black and white is incredible, and it's just dark and dreary. Mm-hmm. And when people scream in that film, they sound genuinely terrified. Like, it's unnerving. There's that scene, like, and we should, I guess everyone knows the story, the nuclear bomb radiates a dinosaur that lives under the water, and he mutates and becomes Godzilla, can breathe atomic breath. And he takes revenge back on human society that scarred him and stuff like that. In fact, his skin in that film is literally modeled off of radiation scars from people who survived Hiroshima and Nagasaki. At the end of the day, it's a Earth versus or human versus nature story. Nature is reconquering humanity and making them see the error of their ways. Godzilla is kind of like an ancient god. Well, he is a god to that one island they find him on. And so it's really a story about divine retribution.
And there's a shot in this movie that I adore where they are on the island and they are walking up a path towards the top of the island, and Godzilla comes over the mountain.
First time you see him.
The first time you see him, and it is...
It's creepy, and his roar is creepy, which is used by a violin and a rubber glove.
It is literally...
That down the strings.
I will say this right now. I think out of all of the Godzilla movies, it is the heaviest and
saddest.
The saddest.
I had a friend cry at this film.
Yeah,
the prayer for peace scene is where they're mourning the destruction of Tokyo and a bunch of children's talking about it. And there's a lot of footage of kids in the hospital scene, and they're like just screaming and crying for their mother and stuff. And it doesn't feel like a movie anymore at that point, because it's not really. It's a movie. This is by a country that the only country to really experience what being hit by two nuclear bombs, and it's mourning that. It's grieving everyone who died in World War II.
Godzilla is designed to look like he has.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't know if you mentioned that.
I did. And I also, one thing too I like with this film is that Japan is both a victim here, but they're also being punished here, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Because Godzilla isn't going and attacking America, he's attacking Japan, and I think it's both reflection on the fact that they are both victims of the war themselves, but also Japan did a lot of nasty things in the war as well. And I think that's also a reflection on the guilt that they had from the war. I know Eiichiro Honda, he wrote in his autobiography how he was a soldier in the Imperial Japanese Army, and he had a lot of grief for one of his jobs was he was stationed to guard a brothel for Chinese women that were more or less enslaved to pleasure the Japanese soldiers. And so he had a lot of grief and a lot of guilt in his heart for when he made a lot of these movies, and a lot of them are reflections of that. I know Atragon or Gotango, that is a film that also deals with reflections on wartime guilt and stuff. And that's very present in this film. I have some fun facts. This is really heavy stuff. I have some fun facts.
I do want to say, I'm going to guess I know most of your fun facts. But
you definitely do.
But if you ever watch that original Godzilla film, never, never, ever watch the American version. It is.
Oh yeah, because they re-edited it with a white guy, so
yeah,
Americans can
worst
watch
things
it.
Ever.
But, fact, America was pretty racist in the 50s.
Yeah, that's fun fact there.
But anyways, don't want to go over too much. One thing, the suit for Godzilla weighed a little under 200 pounds, and it would get up to 140 degrees inside the suit for Haruo Nakajima, who played Godzilla up until the 1970s. And it was really the first, it pioneered suitmation. It was not done before this, really. They wanted to do stop motion like King Kong did, but it would have taken way too much time and money. So they said they had to basically figure out how to make this guy in a suit look gigantic right on the spot. And they built a whole miniature Tokyo at, I forget what scale it's at. I thought I wrote it down, but I don't think I did. But they made a whole miniature Tokyo. They actually went and they couldn't get the blueprints of some buildings. So they had to just study buildings and recreate them as best they could. Yeah. In fact, Godzilla at one point destroys a theater. I forget what theater was called. They destroyed a famous theater inside Tokyo, and people who saw the film there, they ran out screaming because they thought they were going to get... Well, they didn't really think they were getting crushed, but they were scared because it was like they were seeing landmarks that they were currently sitting inside destroyed. Anyways, that's enough about Godzilla. That's obvious. That handles the fear of...
I love that movie.
Mutations and atomic fallout and nuclear war. Body Snatchers is on the other side of things, on aliens.
They remade Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Many times.
Yeah,
This is by Don Siegel and stars Jack. It was written based on a short story by Jack Finney. And the interesting thing about this film is it's a movie about plants come down from space. They radiate down from, I think, a meteor. Mm-hmm. And the plants slowly overtake your body and turn, like, kind of control you. And they're very... They, the, They look exactly like you. They talk how you. They have all your memories, but they're just slightly off. They're too normal. They don't have emotion. Yeah. They do everything, but they don't have emotion besides the desire to breed and repopulate.
So I want to say I have seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original, once in my life. I don't really remember it. But
I want to talk more about what this film means and more than the film itself.
I will say, though, I have seen the Daniel Craig remake.
The 70s one?
The one in 2007.
I heard that one's bad.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrible.
The 70s one is good.
I haven't seen the 70s.
But this one, the big question it becomes, is this a big metaphor for communism or conformity? That's the big question, because the 50s are a very conformist era. This is when you have the perfect family, the perfect kitchen. Everyone's supposed to look and act the same way. And so when you see all these people, these pod people, they're called, mowing their lawns, being very normal but having no emotion in a very white suburban American neighborhood where it's set, it's like, is this critiquing American society in the 50s, or is it reinforcing it with McCarthyism, how the way the main character goes around, and it's like, you don't know who's a pod person or not. It's like, are they a pod person? And then he goes around, loses his mind by the end. He's screaming, you're next. They're already here. They're coming to get you. Is that either mocking or reinforcing the fear that communist agents and spies are living amongst us? They could be your very own neighbors.
Because that's the worst thing that could be going on.
What do you think? Do you think it's about communism or conformity?
I would love to think it's about conformity. I would love to.
I think that's what, the modern sensibilities.
But we have to look at the times. It's definitely about communism, I feel like.
I don't think it necessarily is. But the shocking thing is that in interviews, the director, the cinematographer, the writer, they all say none of them were even thinking about politics when they made this film. And you watch it today, and it's almost impossible to notice that. It's a very political film.
It feels very political.
It feels. And I think that's an interesting thing that we're going to talk more about in these history segments, is that a lot of films...
I've got to rewatch Gone Girl. I got to rewatch Invasion of the Body Snatchers now.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch and come to your own conclusions and what you think about it. But I think what George Romero called cultural osmosis, where you just kind of unconsciously, life reflects art, unconsciously put what you're seeing in the world around you into your art, even if you're not thinking about it. I think that's the case with Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But I think that concludes our history segment. If you want to talk more,
I'm not very interested in the 60s segment, but once you get to the 70s,
the 70s are going to be a big one.
We should just do a whole episode on 70s.
We honestly could,
because that's when it gets good.
But I have some good things lined up for the 60s.
Okay,
but explain to me what Qui-Gon Jinn is.
Oh, you made the joke. My friends made the joke. My mom made the joke. Everybody keeps calling this movie Qui-Gon Jinn, and I get it. Qui-Don sounds like Qui-Gon. I get it. It's funny, silly, but this movie is not funny, silly. This movie is serious, but also not. So, this movie, Qui-Don, was made by Masaki Kobayashi in 1964.
Okay.
And it was actually submitted to the Cannes Film Festival at the time, and it won the Special Jury Award. Which just means that it won, voted, like people who watched the movie really liked it and they voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
But what is Qui-Don? Qui-Don is a collection of four short stories.
It's an anthology.
It's an anthology about ghosts. And each has a metaphor that is so incredibly outdated that it's kind of funny. But
when was it made?
It was made in 1964.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So, I watched the Criterion Collection version. Now, a little history on this movie is that it came out. It was released, like most Japanese films, by Toho, which whenever I see that Toho Scope logo, instant nostalgia. But
yeah,
Toho released it internationally, except in America. They did not release it in America. And when it was released in America by whatever production company that doesn't exist anymore, they actually cut out about an hour and a half of the film. You went from 3 hours to an hour and a half, and they cut multiple scenes and, they just left it as that. And for years you could not find the movie in America for, this is the 60s all the way, like 60s to the dawn of the internet, you couldn't find this movie the full 3 hours anywhere.
Interesting.
Watching it in America, you could only watch the hour and a half version.
Mm.
Criterion was the first to release the full 3 hour version officially in America. So I watched the full 3 hour version through the Criterion Collection DVD that I bought, and it was stunning. Full 4K, lossless audio. It was an amazing experience. And I want to talk about specifically how this movie, before I even hop into the and the show is over, everybody. I will see you next week. Before I even hop into the stories of this movie, what I want to talk about is a little bit of the what's going on around it. So Qui-Don is based off of Qui-Don Stories of the Supernatural,
yes.
A book from the 1800s by Lafcadio Hearn. Lafcadio Hearn was a Greek-born author who moved to Japan, changed his name to a Japanese name, and spread Western art and entertainment to the Japanese populace, and then later in his life spread Japanese art and entertainment to the Western populace. So Lafcadio Hearn wrote this horror book about folk tales of ghosts that he learned while he lived in Japan. And years later, it would become Qui-Don, the movie. And the movie, it has a very interesting style to it. It puts a lot of emphasis on color. There are scenes that are like everything in it is orange. And you're like, okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
And the grass is orange. The people have orange lighting on them. The sky is orange. And you would think that's a little bit weird, but it's so beautiful. The way it's shot is so beautiful. And then within a moment, all of the lighting will switch, and now the entire scene is blue.
Oh.
And there's like a scene. There's a scene in this movie where a guy is talking to his wife about a ghost he encountered. And she stops talking and goes, "Hello?" The entire scene within an instant turns, while you're watching it, into blue. Just this blue lighting. Everything looks blue. Everything looks cold.
That's cool.
Snow is in the house for some reason. There's ice. It's amazing. It all happens within the camera. It's so cool.
That's really neat.
It's so pretty to look at. It's so beautiful.
What are these outdated metaphors?
So the first story is called Black Hair, and it is about a samurai who leaves his wife because he wants to live his life. Right, he wants to get out there in the world and do whatever he wants to be able to be free. So he leaves his wife for that, and he ends up years later marrying this rich woman who's so mean. She's very, very rude, and she's bossy and controlling.
Yeah.
Well, ever since he left his first wife, he can't help but think how much he loved her and how much he misses her, and how much he regrets his decision to leave. So after he's done his service as a samurai, he leaves his second wife and he goes back to the house that his first wife is in. Well, when he gets there, it's all abandoned and it's all dilapidated and just in ruins.
Yeah.
And it is at the beginning of the movie, you see the set and it looks really nice. It's mm-hmm. a really nice house set. And they go back. The set is completely destroyed. It's like they literally gave a whole bunch of people sledgehammers and were like, go hog wild on our set. Literally break everything.
Probably is what they did.
That's probably what they did. But yeah. Like, he goes back and he finds his wife and she looks like she hasn't aged a day. And she's like, let's get married again. I missed you so much.
As a ghost.
And
as a ghost.
As a ghost.
As a ghost.
And he's like, yes. And so But before the day is over, she goes, let us like sleep in the same bed together for once more. And so they go to bed and they're sleeping, and he wakes up and he's on grass, and basically the wood that he was sleeping on had broken and he had fallen into the grass. And when he gets up, the room that looked so nice and pretty before is now in ruins, and next to him is a skeleton, and he's freaking out. He's screaming, what's going on? What's happening? And this black hair is crawling across the ground towards him and like snaking around. And so he's running through the house trying to escape the black hair. He's like clumsy Smurf. He's like tripping over everything.
Okay.
And he falls and he the hair gets him. And in the last moment, the hair is strangling him. And it's like, you forgot me. And then cut to black. And that's the first story.
That's just the first story. I don't even know if we have time to cover the other two.
Yeah. I'll do super quick.
Well, just like you're like
The basically is don't leave your wife is the metaphor of that story.
That's not outdated. That's a good metaphor.
I feel like it's kind of.
I mean, you can leave your wife, but I don't think he left his wife under good conditions in that story.
Well, yes, not under good conditions, but like I think that it just is a very old metaphor.
Like so, divorce is bad.
Divorce is bad, which okay. is such a black and white statement. Like,
okay, I see what you mean.
The second story, super quickly, is about a guy. He's walking through a forest. And a woman in white, there's a blizzard going on. A woman in white is, appears to him and tells him that she'll spare his life from the snow, if he never tells anybody that they met before.
Okay.
So, after this horrifying experience, he lives his life, he meets a woman, and he lives for 10, 20 years until one day he's reminded of the woman in white that he saw all those years ago, and he tells his wife about this encounter.
Idiot.
His wife turns into the woman in white and says, "You betrayed me, and if it weren't for the fact that we have 3 children together, I would kill you right here and now."
Okay.
And so she gets up and she runs away into the forest, and never to be seen again, and now he has to raise his children on his own.
That's unfortunate.
And
there's
that's
a theme here with marriage.
There is a theme here with marriage.
But
so
well,
yeah.
I think we have to wrap it up.
We do have to wrap it up. So I'll say one last thing All of these sets that they made are inside. They're indoor sets. The walls of the indoor warehouse where they filmed it, they painted.
Yeah.
So you can tell that they just painted the walls to have clouds and whatnot. But in the snow one, they paint eyeballs on the wall.
Yummy.
So every scene, there's just eyes staring at the people. It's so cool. It's amazing.
Cool.
It was very pretty. Very beautiful.
It sounds like a very cinematic film.
Super cinematic.
Like a visually impressive.
If you ever want to hang out and watch a movie, we got to watch.
Okay. That sounds like a good choice. But anyways, yes. We're at our time limit here. We went a little overboard in some segments.
We did.
Here, but that's all right. Next week, we're going to talk about films again. I'm talking about this 1960s. I have Psycho and Night of the Living Dead lined up for that.
Which I should have saved Quiet On for the 60s, but
that makes it's all right.
It's fine.
Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. Have a great spooky week. It is October, and beware of Draculas. They're real,
and Jason.
Guys,
Jason's real.
Aliens are also real.
Jason's also real.
Joke. Jason's. Oh yeah, Jason. No, Jason isn't real.
Damn it.
All right, bye guys.
Bye.
Talk to you next week.
Okay.